And went in an insidious rhythm, disappearing just long enough that she could almost forget and feel safe before crashing back with a cruel vengeance. The past had a hold on her, and she'd long given up on breaking free. The best she could do was keep a full glass of water next to her bed. She hastily drained the largest share of it, saving a little bit to wet a cloth and dab the perspiration from her neck. Dawn had begun its slow creep through the house. She wouldn't be able to fall asleep again, and her charges wouldn't wake for a few hours more, she hoped. Since she was awake, she decided to dress and have a stealthy wander downstairs. Even after all these weeks, there were parts of the house she still hadn't explored, namely, the library. The room called to her. Any room full of books called to her. But this particular library wailed like a bevy of sirens. Maybe, just maybe, somewhere in those shelves was her lost copy of Messier's Catalogue of Star Clusters and Nebulae, the book he'd absconded with after their collision in Hatchards, the one she'd imagined him to have kept tucked in his breast pocket for months, desperately hoping to see her again. At the memory, she inwardly cringed. She began her search on the lowest shelf, scanning the full breadth of the bookcase before working her way upward. By the fourth shelf, she was straining on tiptoe to make out the titles. The fifth and topmost was hopelessly beyond her reach. She looked about for a book stair or step stool, but her search proved fruitless. Undeterred, she pushed an ottoman toward the shelves and climbed atop that. Much better.
Good morning.
Alexandra lost her footing on the ottoman. Her hands closed on the bookshelf. For a moment she dangled, feet twisting in the air. There was only one option, to let go and drop to the floor. Her body would survive the fall, even if her dignity didn't. It was only a matter of 2 feet to the ground.
Go to it, then. The longer you dangle, the more ridiculous you look.
However, in the same instant that she released her grip, the shelf, already groaning with books, caved under the added weight of her body. She fell to the carpet in a heap, and then a shelf's worth of books fell atop her. Alex curled into a ball, tucked her head beneath her crossed arms, and waited for it to be over. She winced as volumes pelted her from above. A few of the weightier tomes landed with a force hard enough to make her yelp. At last, the blows came to a halt. She cautiously lifted her head and peered upward. Perhaps the bookcase had vomited up the last of its leather-bound knowledge. No, it hadn't. There was one book more. A formidable, encyclopedia-sized volume bound in crimson leather, and as she watched with horror, it slid off the unhinged walnut shelf, plummeting directly toward her head. Alexandra ducked, squeezed her eyes shut, and braced herself for the worst. However, instead of the skull-crushing thwack of oblivion, she heard only a soft thud.
Good God! Tell me you're alive under there.
I am, she said weakly, though she rather wished she weren't. As deaths go, it would have been a kind one. There were worse ways to meet one's demise than being buried alive in literature. Daisy could have named dozens of them. As she attempted to sit up, Alex found herself aided by a large, strong hand hooked under her upper arm. Chase. He cast aside the book he'd caught, and Alex watched it land atop the heap. He must have caught the thing an instant before it bashed in her brains. It wasn't an overstatement to say. He might have saved her life. At the very least, he'd saved her a splitting headache. He crouched before her. Anything broken?
I don't think so.
He searched her gaze.
What month is it?
July.
And what day of the week?
Wednesday.
How many tiny buttons on the back of your frock?
I don't know. Who counts such things?
He shrugged, unrepentantly. I do.
Of course you do. She tucked a stray wisp of hair behind her ear. I'm fine, thank you. You merely startled me.
I expect so. Chase Reynaud in a library, searching for missing estate ledgers, no less. Who wouldn't topple with surprise?
I didn't mean to say...
He brushed off her attempt at an apology.
I've also been drinking wine and entertaining a great many impure thoughts, so it's not a complete break with character.
He lowered his voice to a teasing murmur. If you were looking for the erotic novels, they're hidden behind the books of sermons. He nodded toward the opposite side of the library, second shelf from the bottom over there. Her cheeks flushed,
I wasn't looking for those.
I wouldn't think less of you if you were. I read them all the time.
I don't think they suit my purposes today. I was searching for new reading material for the girls.
She knelt and began to gather the fallen books.
He joined her in the effort.
Why? I purchased a great many books for the schoolroom months ago.
Yes, I know. I was there, in Hatchet's. You made me drop all my books then, too. I was probably even wearing the same frock.
Alex absorbed the timely reminder. No matter what they were doing in the dark of night, nothing else had changed. They had a temporary physical arrangement. She mustn't hope for anything more.
Rosamond's read all the books 10 times over, and Daisy needs something different, something suited to her interests.
He stood to have a look at the broken shelf. He teased the splintered wood with his thumbnail.
Rotted through, he pronounced. I'll have to replace the plank.
Good, then I needn't apologize. Instead, you can thank me for finding your next project.
She drew to her feet.
Look, she said, flipping through the plates of a human anatomy book. This would be perfect for Daisy, budding physician that she is.
Budding gravedigger, I think you mean.
Just look at the detail in these illustrations.
She moved closer, angling her body so that he could peer over her shoulder. He reached over her arm to turn the page. As he did so, his forearm grazed her shoulder. His breath caressed her ear. Alex stared at the line drawing of the respiratory system. Perhaps the illustration could help her identify exactly which features of her own anatomy were failing her, because his proximity made it difficult to breathe.
I took an interest in anatomy as a youth, he murmured. Continued my studies all the way through university.
Truly?
Oh, yes, I found it fascinating. But I did the majority of my learning from life rather than books.
He took the volume from her hand, closed it, and set it aside.
Do you know?
I think it's time for another lesson.
With that, he turned her toward him and captured her mouth in a searing kiss. His hands made possessive sweeps, caressing her breasts and thighs and hips, awakening her body the way dawn awoke the earth. When he lifted his head, his eyes had a devilish gleam. He nudged her backward until her spine met the library shelving. Then he sank to his knees. Chase's skin tightened with anticipation. He'd been waiting for this.
Chase, she whispered. Chase, get up.
Get up? The hell he would. He was just getting started.
He gathered her skirts with both hands, hiking them high enough so that he could dive under. Her frothy petticoats drifted down around him. They smelled of starch and soap, that faint hint of orange flower water, and the intoxicating feminine musk of her skin. The draped fabric around him was the hushed, sacred temple of a pagan goddess, and he was a supplicant on his knees. However, the offering he had in mind would be no sacrifice. He slid his hand down one of her stocking-clad calves, bent her leg at the knee, and hooked it over his shoulder. That accomplished, he reached to grasp her by the hips and tilt her pelvis forward. There. Now she was open to his view, to his touch, to his kiss. He nuzzled the slope of her bare thigh, reveling in the satiny texture of her skin against his cheek. Beginning at her garter, he trailed kisses upward in an arrow-straight path to her cleft. Her thigh tensed. She squirmed in his gasp.
What are you doing?
Chase decided demonstration was the most useful answer. He ran his thumb down the seam of her sex, parting her with a gentle touch. Then he leaned into her heat, sweeping his tongue along the sweet, silky furrow. Her hips jerked, and she kicked him in the kidney.
Chase!
Her hands patted around his back and shoulders, meeting atop his head. She gave him a shake.
Chase, we can't do this, not here.
Certainly we can.
He wasn't sure if his words reached her, given that his voice was muffled by her skirts, and his mouth had more pleasant tasks at hand than enunciation. He explored the treasure before him with slow, gentle passes of his tongue, giving her time to adjust to the sensation. She gasped and bucked.
This is so very wrong!
Beneath her skirts, he grinned.
That's what makes it so very good.
A servant could come by at any moment.
Then stop interrupting.
Her fingers still clutched at his hair, but she ceased struggling. With that, he returned to his task. he found the swollen bud at the apex of her cleft and fluttered his tongue. Her breath escaped on an erotic sigh. That's it. Surrender to the pleasure. Surrender to me. He slid his hands to her bottom, clasping tight with both hands and drawing her closer, the better to kiss, lick, suck, nibble. Using her reactions as his guide, he learned the ways to make her sigh, moan, whimper, and dig her fingernails into his scalp. Chase! Hearing his name from her lips was the most heady triumph of all. It told him he wasn't an anonymous lover to her, but a man, one with whom she would share her most intimate places and sensations. A man she deemed worthy of her body and her pleasure. Even if he could never be worthy of her heart or her hand, this was enough. At least he would tell himself it was enough. She began to roll her hips, seeking more contact, wanting it faster. A muscle in her thigh quivered. He knew she was close. Come, he silently willed. Come for me. A few more flickering pulses of his tongue, and she went over the edge. She came with a series of shuddering whimpers, bracing herself on his head and shoulders. He didn't let up until her pleasure eased, and even then he couldn't tear himself away. He pressed his mouth to her inner thigh, sucking and biting until a bruise rose on her tender flesh. There. Now he'd left his mark. Chase Reynold was here. Once her breathing slowed and the leg draped over his shoulder went limp, he extricated himself from beneath her skirts and carefully rose to his feet, making sure to support her weight as he did so. God, she looked beautiful. Throat flushed, chest heaving, her glazed eyes looking up through thick, dark lashes. Her hair had been mussed in the back from where she'd reeled and rubbed against the shelves. The early morning light painted her skin with a palette of golds and rosy pinks. You, she sighed. Are terrible. You, he pressed his lips to her forehead, are delicious. He kissed her cheek, beautiful, then the corner of her lips, irresistible. He leaned in, hungry for more. She put her hand to his chest, holding him in place. He took a step back, then cocked his head and searched her expression. Is something the matter? No, she wet her lips. Not really, it's only... Dropsy! Chase wheeled about, searching for the source of this abrupt diagnosis. What? Rosamond stood in the corridor. It's dropsy today, she repeated. The funeral is prepared.
Right. He ran a hand through his hair. Miss Mountbatten and I were just...
Looking through books, Alex finished. Well, yes, Rosamond gave them a quizzical look. That is what one does in a library, isn't it?
Precisely, Chase declared. Go on then, we'll be up directly. Once Rosamond had left, he and Alex exchanged looks of relief. That was close, he said.
Much too close.
I concur.
If she'd been 3 minutes earlier, Chase, just imagine.
No, he clipped. I refuse to imagine. You can't make me. He stood aside for her to precede him as they left the room.
You're right. There's no use fretting over it now. She repinned her hair as they went. Dropsy. Really? I thought that was an old person's disease.
Well, you know what they say. Only the wood die young.
She stopped in the middle of the corridor and burst out laughing. That, she wheezed, was dreadful, criminally bad.
It made you laugh, didn't it?
Finally. Chapter 21
Chase. Chase!
Chase tore his gaze away from the clock.
Hm? And?
Barrow gave him an impatient look.
What did you want to do about the mining interests?
Which mining interests?
The ones we've been discussing for the past hour. The coal in Yorkshire. Is this jogging your memory? Right, the coal, sorry.
Memories weren't Chase's problem. His mind was full to bursting with memories. The problem was they were all memories of Alexandra beneath him, naked, gripping the bedsheets in ecstasy. Even if his body was in the study with Barrow, his mind was downstairs in his retreat, which wasn't even his retreat anymore. Over the past fortnight, it had become their retreat.
Chase straightened in his chair and sifted through the report before him.
Hold on to the mines. The seam is nowhere near exhausted, and the demand for coal will only increase.
Agreed.
Barrow dipped his quill and bent over the writing desk.
Chase, I know how you feel about me meddling in your personal affairs, but this is different. You must put a stop to it.
To what?
Whatever it is you're doing with Miss Mountbatten.
Chase looked up sharply.
What makes you think I'm doing anything with Miss Mountbatten? Oh, come along.
Barrow threw down his quill.
Whenever she's in the room, you steal hungry glances at each other. It's obvious.
It is not obvious.
Barrow lifted his eyebrows, and Chase realised too late that he'd given himself away.
That's not what I meant. It's not obvious, because it's not happening.
Work on that gentleman's retreat seems to have stalled. You haven't demanded any opinions on satin bedding or erotic etchings in weeks.
I was going to solicit your preferences on perfumed sensual oils, Chase said idly, but then I decided not to spoil your Christmas present.
Someone knocked at the door.
Chase!
Alexandra popped her head around the door, her lips clamped shut and her cheeks flushed pink.
Oh, Mr. Barrow, I didn't realise you were here. I beg your pardon for interrupting.
Not at all, Barrow said.
He slid a meaningful glance in Chase's direction.
We were discussing nothing, apparently.
If that's the case,
Alex came from behind the door and entered the room.
Mr. Reynaud, I thought you'd want to know that Rosamond and Daisy are ready.
Ready? Ready for what? Once again, Chase had completely lost hold of his faculties, because she stood in the doorway, dressed in a gauzy daffodil yellow frock, and the only readiness that mattered was how ready he felt to pull her into his arms. She stole his breath away. He rose to his feet. Etiquette didn't require a gentleman to stand when a member of his house staff entered the room. Alexandra knew it, and her expression reflected the awkwardness of his gesture. But Chase was unrepentant. A man rose to his feet for a lady, his queen, or a divine being, and she was at least one of those, if not all three.
I have them dressed and ready for the outing.
When he didn't answer, she added,
You do recall promising them an outing? I spoke to you about it the other evening and you said yes.
Her eyes took on a saucy gleam, rather emphatically.
Cheeky minx. Only the devil knew how many times she'd heard the word yes from his lips on any of several recent evenings.
She must have tricked him into agreeing to this, when he was insensate with pleasure.
He said, Barrow and I have a great deal of business to attend to.
Please, I've promised Rosamond and Daisy. The girls will be so disappointed.
She'd promised them, damn it.
Broken promises were something he avoided at all costs, and the simplest way to avoid them was not to make any in the first place. Tonight he would give her a stern talking to about making promises on his behalf, and perhaps a light spanking just to underscore the matter. But that would be later. As for this afternoon, that fetching yellow frock just begged to be out of doors. He wanted to see the breeze whip the flimsy muslin about her legs, wanted to watch her untie the ribbons of her bonnet with a gloved hand, and then give him a bashful smile. And what he didn't want was to spend another afternoon in this study with Barrow.
Give me an hour to make a few arrangements, he said. Tell the girls we'll be going to the park.
She smiled. Thank you, sir.
When she'd gone, Barrow turned to him and said dryly,
Oh, that wasn't obvious at all.
Do you know, I've been thinking.
Chase reached for his coat and hat.
We spent entirely too much time together.
I can't disagree.
Barrow tapped his quill on the edge of the inkwell and continued in a quiet, serious tone.
Be careful, Chase. She's not the only one who stands to be hurt.
Don't worry, the girls have no idea.
I wasn't referring to the girls. I meant you.
Chase snorted.
Now you're just being absurd.
Am I?
Yes,
Chase answered as he quit the room, sounding far more authoritative than he felt.
Are we there yet?
Daisy dragged her feet along the well-trodden path. Chase didn't even break stride.
Nope.
You might slow the pace a touch, Alex suggested in a murmur, for the girl's sake.
And for mine. After trotting alongside him for nearly a half hour, she and the girls were breathing hard and perspiring in the summer's afternoon sun. They'd reached the halfway point of Hyde Park now, where the serpentine widened into a lake. Are there ices in this park?
Rosamond asked. I've no idea, Chase replied.
We were promised a treat, not a military march.
Daisy halted in the path.
Millicent has dysentery,
Chase groaned. She does not. She was perfectly well a moment ago.
The grueling pace was too much for her. Now she could die at any moment.
Alexandra decided to intervene. Here. She untied a ribbon knotted at her nape, removing her coral pendant and tying it about Millicent's neck instead.
But that was your mother's, Daisy said.
Millicent may borrow it for the day. It's especially effective against dysentery, and Mr. Reynaud promises to walk a bit more slowly.
Actually, we don't have to walk much farther at all, Chase said. There's your surprise, girls. It's waiting over there on the bank.
When Alex saw what he'd pointed out, her stomach knotted. A neat little skiff bobbed atop the rippling water, tied to a tree branch at the side of the lake. The miniature craft had been gaily painted, and it boasted a crisp white sail and a jaunty red flag.
You mean to take the girls sailing on the lake?
No, we're going to skate on the lake. Yes, sailing, if you can even call it that on this small scale. And I don't mean to take only the girls, you're coming too.
Oh, her throat worked, but it felt like trying to swallow paper.
That's kind of you, but I'll wait on the bank.
Nonsense.
He stripped off his coat and draped it over the tree branch before turning up his cuffs.
You must be dying to get on the water again. This is hardly a voyage on the open sea, but it's something as close as I could give you at the moment.
The dear man. He'd arranged this not only as an outing for the girls, but as a gift to her. Now she could understand the reason for his determined clip through Mayfair and across the park. He'd been excited. Inside, Alex wanted to weep. Everything in her screamed for escape, but how could she disappoint him?
Use your common sense, she told herself. Be rational. As he says, this isn't a merchant ship bobbing about a wild, stormy sea. It isn't even a wherry on the Thames. It's a skiff on the Serpentine on a Tuesday in August, smack in the middle of London. There isn't any true reason to be afraid. So stiffen up and get on with things.
She took his hand.
His eyes warmed. That's my girl.
Her heart flapped and fluttered like a loose ribbon caught by the wind. The girls had climbed aboard the skiff and begun preparing for their maiden voyage as proper pirates. Millicent was placed at the fore of the craft, like a mermaid decorating the ship's prow. As the girls unfurled the skiff's tiny sail, she kept watch on their every move.
Rosamond, come away from the side at once.
Chase stretched his arm across her back in a stealthy motion. Take the afternoon off, Miss Mountbatten. I'm relieving you of your governess duties today. She could take the afternoon off from being a governess, perhaps, but she couldn't take an afternoon off from being herself. She was still that shivering girl in the dark, caught between pelting rain and a hungry sea. She was still that stammering woman in hatchets, entranced by roguish green eyes and the scents of sandalwood and mint. Alex was still Alex. Chase was still Chase, and she could no longer deny that she was mad for him, despite there being every rational argument against it. She'd been ensnared by infatuation the moment they collided in that bookshop, and now she couldn't imagine ever getting free. This hopeless yearning would be the end of her, or at least the death of her common sense.
I brought provisions.
He withdrew a tiny corked jug from his pocket and lifted it triumphantly.
There's grog.
The girls celebrated with rousing huzzas. Chase unstoppered the jug and passed it to Daisy, who struggled to lift it to her lips.
Don't worry, he whispered in Alex's ear. It's just water and molasses.
They'll have stomach aches.
Chase clasped the skiff's prow and grunted as he pushed the craft off the bank. The girls' second round of cheering was even more rousing than the first. He kept one boot firmly planted in the bank and had the other in the boat, keeping the skiff close. Then he motioned to Alex.
Come then, I'll hand you in.
She hesitated a few feet from the water. Panic rose in her breast. Her heart thundered so fiercely she couldn't hear anything but her own frantic pulse.
I can't do this. Truly, I'll wait here. It's too small for four.
No, it's not, Rosamond argued. There's plenty of room.
Daisy propped her hands on her hips.
Mr. Reynaud, you must make her come along.
I agree. If she won't come willingly, piracy is the only choice.
Chase lunged, took Alex by the waist and lifted, parting her from the safety of the bank and swinging her into the boat.
I can't, she said. Please, I can't.
As Chase moved to deposit her on the bench of the skiff, she clung to his neck. From the boat, Daisy tugged at her skirts. She began to thrash, unable to think of anything other than fighting her way back onto the bank. The boat only tipped further, making everything worse. In her scrambling panic, she made a wild kick, a kick that connected with Millicent, sending her flying through the air. The doll landed with a splash in the center of the lake. Daisy shrieked. At first, the doll's wooden head kept her afloat, and for a few seconds it seemed all would be fine. Just row to the center, fish her out with a long stick, and she'd only be a bit worse for the adventure. She'd survived far greater trials. But as her wool-batting body started to soak through, the unthinkable occurred. The resilient, indestructible, death-defying Millicent, and with her, Alexandra's coral pendant, began to sink.
No!
Daisy screamed.
She's drowning!
Chase set Alex back on dry land, not on my watch. He had his boots and his waistcoat off in a matter of seconds. A talent gained over years of hasty disrobing, no doubt. Once he'd stripped down to his shirt and trousers, Chase dived in. He swam out to the center of the lake, making directly for the area where the doll had disappeared. Again and again he dived beneath the water and remained submerged for long seconds before surfacing empty-handed. Every time he sank out of sight, Alex held her own breath. Daisy was inconsolable. Even Rosamond clung to Alex's side. 7 times now, and no result. He had to be growing fatigued. Alex cupped her hands around her mouth to call to him.
Mr. Reynard, come back to the bank.
No, he shouted in reply, pushing his hair from his brow. Not without that bloody doll.
He went under once again, and this time he stayed out of sight for what seemed like ages. Alex was beside herself. He could have been overcome with fatigue or fainted from lack of air or become tangled in reeds. There were scores of ways a man could die in the water, and she'd witnessed far too many of them. Dolls were replaceable, in some cases, resurrectable. Her corals might be all she had left of her mother, but they weren't flesh and blood. Nothing else mattered right now, nothing but him.
Chase!
She cried. At last, he surfaced. Not in the center of the lake, but close to the bank, taking her unawares. He emerged from the water with a spray of fanfare, his translucent shirt pasted to his torso and his hair slicked back. Like Poseidon rising from the sea, hoisting a waterlogged doll in place of a trident. Chase Reynard, god of the serpentine. And oh, he looked ready to enjoy a bit of worship. He grinned at her, the horrid man, as if he hadn't just given her the fright of her life, and the past 10 minutes were an expected element of any outing in Hyde Park. He presented the doll to Daisy. She took in some water, but I think she'll pull through. Instead of hugging the doll, Daisy attached herself to Chase's leg, clinging to him with all 4 limbs. Alex rather wished she could do the same. Chase shook his leg and Daisy held tight. He looked to Alex. You're the sailor. How does one remove a barnacle? It felt damned good to be a hero for a change, even if he was a fleeting, insignificant one. However, on the way home from the park, Chase's glow of triumph faded to exhaustion, both of body and of mind. When they arrived back at the house, Alexandra herded Rosamond and Daisy up the stairs at once. Bath first, girls, dinner second. Chase decided these were excellent ideas. Once he'd scrubbed the mud and lake water from his body, he took supper in his study and opened a bottle of claret to keep him company while he went over yet another folio of estate papers. It was nearing midnight by the time Alexandra joined him. They seemed to have chosen similar activities. Her plaited hair was slick from bathing, and she carried a book tucked under her arm. Wine, she sighed. What an excellent idea. Join me, please. Rescue me from the fluctuating corn prices of 1792.
He poured her a glass of claret, and she accepted it eagerly, downing half the glass in one go. He'd asked the servants to lay a fire tonight, even though it was summer.
I wasn't certain you'd be coming down. I thought perhaps you'd have fallen asleep too.
It was quite a struggle to settle the girls into bed. An hour of reading from Robinson Crusoe, plus 2 dishes of custard each.
Custard? I expressly made a prohibition against custard.
Then next time you can put them to bed, she teased, since you know all the best methods.
I suppose I can let it go, this time.
Even after they fell asleep, my own nerves needed a bit of soothing. She traced the rim of her wine glass with her fingertip. Nothing like an hour or two staring into the telescope for that. When I focus on the stars and the spaces between them, all my other cares fade into the dark. Chase hated that she had other cares at all. He especially hated that so many of them were his doing. You are quite the hero now, she said.
Bah.
I'm so sorry about it. It was all my fault.
No, it was mine. I shouldn't have tried to force the matter. I didn't realize how frightened you were.
He cocked his head.
So tell me something. Why would a sea captain's daughter raised aboard a merchant ship be afraid of the water?
Her terror had been palpable that afternoon. Hesitation would be understandable. Her father had been lost at sea. But true panic. Perhaps there was more to it than that. He sensed she didn't want to answer the question. He decided not to press. I'm curious too, she said. Why would a man with a good heart, willing to dive into a lake to save a bedraggled doll, be afraid of raising 2 orphaned girls?
It wasn't only the doll.
I know, thank you. She touched the coral pendant where it lay at the base of her throat. He was glad to see it where it belonged. She'd knotted it onto a new length of ribbon, this time a rich sapphire blue. You're so good at this, she went on. The comforting, the caring. You'll make an excellent guardian. Residing with you would be worlds better for them than any boarding school.
Maybe they'll like school. I liked school.
Naturally you did. Your school was mischief and sport and studies of actual subjects, not embroidery and etiquette. You were taught to go out and conquer the world. They will be taught to live in a satin-lined pocket. I know. I attended one of those schools. And just like Rosamond and Daisy, I was sent there by relations who wanted nothing to do with me.
This is different.
Is it? You're rejecting them, just as everyone else has done. Don't believe they don't feel it. And if you send them away, they are never going to trust anyone again. They just want your attention, can't you see? Even if they have to tie you with ropes or douse you with water or devise a different death for a doll every morning. Sometimes I think Daisy does it. Just for the excuse to hold your hand once a day. And you ought to see the way Rosamond looks at you when you're too occupied to notice. She'd never admit it, but she's desperate for your approval.
She reached for his hand.
Chase, they love you already.
The words rocked him. But they changed nothing. He could not, should not be responsible for anyone's well-being. Even if he cared for, or God help him, loved that person, to cave to his desire for companionship would be selfish in the extreme. It's impossible, Alexandra, unthinkable.
She gave an exasperated groan.
You're always saying that. And for good reason, he said firmly.
What good reason is that?
The last time I promised to look after someone, he ended up dead.
Chapter 22.
Dead.
Alex searched his eyes. Her impulse was to dismiss his words, assume he must be exaggerating. But his intense, defiant gaze spoke of something beyond accidents or misunderstandings. Regret, guilt, pain. So much pain. Tell me. She made it a demand rather than a request. Whatever secrets he had, he needed to purge them before they devoured him from the inside out. Chase, tell me.
The doorbell rang.
Son of a whore, she muttered.
He was taken aback. I've never heard you curse.
I try to avoid using profanity, but I grew up around sailors. I certainly know how. The late-night visitor abandoned the bell in favor of pounding at the door.
Chase started toward the door as if to answer it himself, but apparently a servant beat him to it. The caller didn't wait for an introduction but stormed directly into the room.
"Where's Alexandra?" he demanded gruffly.
"I have a better question." Chase stepped between Alex and the intruder. "Who the devil are you?" Alex smiled.
"He's the Duke of Ashbury."
Truly, it couldn't be anyone else. It wasn't as though there were two dark, tall, imposing dukes in England bearing scars on one side of their body from a misfired rocket at Waterloo. Ash's scarred face gave him an intimidating, even fearsome appearance, but Alexandra knew him to be tender-hearted beneath the scars and utterly devoted to his wife. He also made an excellent friend.
"Ash!"
Alex emerged from the shadows and rushed to him, giving him a hug before he could deflect it.
"But why have you come to London? I hope there's nothing wrong with Emma or the baby."
"Emma and the baby are fine."
He looked over her shoulder, sending a glare in Chase's direction.
"As for what I'm doing in London, I'm here to plant my boot in someone's ass."
"I thought you'd given that up."
"I thought so too. But this employer of yours has me coming out of retirement. I came as soon as I heard you'd taken up residence in this place."
He walked past her to stare down Chase face to face.
"You deserve to know what a worthless scoundrel he is, Alex."
"Yes,"
Chase exclaimed. He reached for Ashbury's hand and pumped it in a vigorous greeting.
"Thank you.
I've been trying to tell her myself, but she won't listen." Ashbury looked more than a bit thrown by Chase's invitation. He gave Alex a "what the devil is he on about" look. Alex could only shrug in response. "Be seated, the both of you." Chase went to the brandy decanter on the sideboard. "Ashbury, can I pour you a drink?"
"I brought my own."
Ash pulled a flask from his coat pocket and uncapped it. "Even better," Chase replied, pouring himself a brandy.
"Do go on. Don't wait on me."
Alex sat on the divan, since she knew neither of the men would sit until she did. They might not be sterling examples of upright gentlemen, but they were perfectly capable of behaving themselves when they wished. Ash took an armchair. Ash turned to Alex, ignoring their host and speaking in a low, serious tone. "Listen to me, Alexandra. This man is a known libertine. Even before my injuries, I knew of his reputation. Everyone knows he is unwelcome in any good family."
"See?"
Chase returned, pulling up a chair and joining the group. "Exactly as I've been telling you, Miss Mountbatten. I am the most wretched of rakes."
"I wasn't unaware of Mr. Reynolds' popularity with ladies," Alex said carefully.
"Has he touched you?"
"Oh, had he ever. But what happened between them wasn't any of Ash's concern."
"Not in any uninvited manner."
"Are you certain?"
"Absolutely certain."
"Now, now."
Chase shifted forward in his chair. "Be honest, Miss Mountbatten."
"I am being honest. Mr. Reynolds has not subjected me to any unwanted attentions, nor taken advantage of me in any way."
Ash looked suspicious, but he didn't belabor the question.
"Regardless, his sexual escapades are merely the tip of the iceberg."
"Oh, I haven't even acquainted her with a tip," Chase said merrily. "Not properly."
"Just ignore him," Alex told the Duke. "Go on."
"3 years ago, there was a sordid, suspicious business with his cousin."
"I'd been wondering when we'd get to this." Chase took a large swallow of brandy. "This is the good part. Pay attention." Ash gave Chase an annoyed look.
"Do you mind? We're having a conversation here."
"I presume you mean the old Duke's son," Alex went on. "The one who would have been the heir had he not died?"
"The cousin didn't merely die," Ash said. "He was killed."
"Surely you're not accusing Mr. Reynolds of murder?"
"He might as well," Chase said. "My cousin didn't die at my hand, but I killed him just the same."
Ashbury rolled his eyes.
"If you're going to interrupt me every 10 seconds, you may as well do this yourself."
"You know, that's a fine idea." Chase set aside his brandy. "I'll take over, Ashbury. There are a few sporting magazines on the tea table if you need to amuse yourself in the meantime."
Ash harumphed.
Chase leaned forward, bracing his arms on his knees and folding his hands together. "He was the youngest of my 3 cousins, and the best of the lot. Meant for the church, not the dukedom, but my middle cousin died in the war,
and the eldest had a riding accident not long after. And then suddenly, Anthony was the heir, 20 years old, no experience of the world or preparation for the title, still grieving for his older brothers and so naive. My uncle sent him to London for the season. I was supposed to show him the town. Give him some exposure to society, help him make friends. I promised I'd look after him, and he sat back with a sigh. I failed.
That's a generous summary, Ash put in. I'm getting to the details, Ashbury, Chase continued. It's probably no surprise that my ideas of society and culture were somewhat different from my uncle's. I took my cousin around to the clubs, pleasure gardens, the theatres, both respectable and less than so. He needed some true experience among his peers, enough confidence to hold his own. One night we began at the club, then it was on to the opera dances. By the time we arrived at the gaming hall, we were having a right jolly time. Looking back, he was deeper into his cups than I realised. I wasn't precisely sober either. An alluring bit of satin skirt floated by. I was flirtatious, she was willing. I told myself Anthony would be fine. He had to learn to look after himself eventually, didn't he? So I left with her. And I never saw my cousin alive again. Alex was tempted to offer some crooning words of sympathy, but she didn't want to interrupt him when he so clearly had so much more to say. He accused a man of cheating at the 21 table. The fellow denied it, but Anthony wouldn't let the matter go. It was the sort of row I could have smoothed over in a matter of seconds had I been there, but I wasn't there, so the argument escalated, they went outside, and Chase rubbed his face with both hands, and when he looked up again, his eyes were red. Had I been keeping watch on him, as I promised, I could have saved him.
Perhaps you didn't want to save him, Ashbury said. It's rumoured that you killed him yourself.
Ash!
Alexandra was aghast.
No one saw this fight happen in the alleyway. Reynaud was conveniently nowhere to be found.
I told you I was with
a woman, yes. Which woman was that again?
Chase's jaw tensed as though he didn't want to answer. I couldn't give you her name. I never learned it.
How convenient.
Alexandra spoke up.
Surely you don't believe he killed his cousin in cold blood?
Perhaps not. But the suspicions are not wholly unreasonable, as next in line, Reynaud stood to benefit directly from his cousin's death.
I should think you know better than to heed that sort of gossip, she said.
He's only relating facts, Chase said. I did directly benefit. And there are many who suspect that my cousin's death was no accident. And then I wrangled legal control from my uncle a few years later. Your friend is not the first to deem it remarkable that I went from fourth in line for the title to presumptive heir with power of attorney in the span of a few years.
Remarkable indeed, Ash said.
But don't believe the rumour that my uncle's illness is some sort of ruse. When he viewed the lifeless body of his third and only remaining son, he suffered an apoplexy on the spot. The old man's been paralysed and unable to speak ever since, Chase said bitterly. So you see, I couldn't have planned it. But if you're conferring with the gossips, it worked out well for me anyhow. Is there anything I've forgotten, Ashbury?
Ash rose to his feet. The bit where you're a base, rascally, cheating, lack linen mate.
Chase snapped his fingers. Oh yes, that too, whatever it meant.
Ashbury only swears in Shakespearean, she explained.
The Duke turned to Alexandra and crossed his arms over his chest.
Alex, I hope you see him clearly now.
See him clearly?
The suggestion that Chase would devise a plot to kill off his cousin and wrest legal control from his uncle was absurd. She knew Ash loved Shakespeare, but this wasn't a performance of Richard III. Not to mention, if the Duke of Ashbury meant to convince her Chase was a villain, he ought to have sent someone else. Someone without a history of inspiring wildly untruthful rumours.
Reviled through London, Sounds remarkably like someone else I know, and dearly care about. A duke who not so long ago skulked about London, styling himself the Monster of Mayfair.
That's entirely different.
And yet the rumours were equally contrived and false.
Alex shook her head.
You know, you two have so much in common, you ought to be friends.
We are nothing alike,
Ash sputtered. No one could possibly confuse us, Chase agreed.
Of course not,
Ash continued.
One of us is a repulsive monster, the other was scarred at Waterloo.
She spoke over their protests. You should see yourselves. You're giving me identical scowls right this moment.
I am not scowling,
the two men said, in unison, while scowling. For her part, Alex couldn't resist a smug smile.
Well, you seem to share one thing in common, the belief that I can't be trusted with my own decisions. Ash, you don't need to worry. You know, I've always been the most sensible of the group. I have a good head on my shoulders, and I keep my feet on the ground. I can take care of myself.
You don't have to remain here with him, Alex. Come and stay with me and Emma. We'd be happy to have you. And if you developed a sudden passion for childminding, we can put you to work.
I truly appreciate that, but I can't leave without completing the job I was hired to do. The girls need me. More to the point, they need him. He isn't.
She lowered her voice to a whisper.
He isn't what others think. He isn't what he thinks. You don't. Please send my love to Emma and the babe, and my congratulations to the proud father as well. She kissed his cheek. Go home to your family.
At last, he relented. Chase opened the front door in a clear invitation for the Duke to leave. Before departing, he addressed Chase. If you hurt her, even in the slightest way, I will eviscerate you.
Understood. I mean it, Reynaud. In fact, gutting would be too good for you. I will subject you to my cat. Your cat? Chase laughed. To mewl at me, I suppose. Trust me, we're not speaking of the average cat.
Alexandra spoke up.
I can attest to this.
I'll strip you bare. Tie your hands behind your back. Smear salmon on your manly bits and lock the two of you in a wardrobe. Once he's clawed your bollocks to shreds, I'll crush whatever remains of you to a bloody formless pulp.
Good Lord.
Chase sounded a little awed.
That's remarkably vivid. Did you plan all this out just for me, or do you keep a list of gruesome threats to use as the occasion arises? To stay away from her, King of Cod Pieces.
He grabbed Chase by the front of his shirt. Or I will make you wish you'd never been born. Chase shrugged off Ash's grip.
Too late on that score.
Chapter 23
Once the Duke of Arsbury finally left and took his feline torture plans with him, Chase turned to Alexandra. He crossed his arms.
Well, I hope that puts paid to the matter. Are you convinced?
Convinced of what, precisely?
That I am the worst of all possible guardians, that it doesn't matter what I wish to do, or even if I love those girls.
If I care about them, I should not, must not, take the responsibility of caring for them.
Of that? No, I'm not convinced of that at all.
He smacked his hand to his forehead and groaned.
Alexandra, come along. I couldn't even look after a 20-year-old young man. This wasn't a case of my cousin falling into a bit of youthful mischief. I failed to keep him alive.
Her look went soft and her voice went softer.
Chase, I'm so sorry.
Damn it, do not be sorry.
Why shouldn't I be sorry? You lost your cousin in an act of tragic violence. It's natural to feel sympathy.
Were you not listening?
I gave my word to my uncle. I promised I'd keep a close watch on him. I broke that promise. In the worst possible place, at the worst possible time, he was stabbed outside a gaming hell and bled to death in the alley alone. And where was I? In a CD inn in bed with a woman whose name I did not know, so don't make excuses for me.
She took a step in his direction.
I mean it.
He held her off with an outstretched hand.
Don't do it, Alex. Don't try to hold me with my head in your lap and kiss my tortured brow and stroke my hair and tell me I'm blameless and misunderstood.
Her nose wrinkled.
I hadn't intended to do any such thing.
Oh, he said. Well then, good.
Damn.
She sat on the divan and patted the space next to her, inviting him to sit too. He found himself helpless to refuse. Unsurprisingly, he had never been able to resist a woman's invitation to closeness. That was the root of all his problems. She angled to face him, propping her elbow on the back of the divan and leaning her head on her hand. She looked beautiful and thoughtful, and even more beautiful for being thoughtful.
You made a mistake, she said, and not a small one. A grave one with terrible consequences. You broke a promise to your uncle,
and you deserted your cousin when you ought to have stayed at his side. Did you wield the knife that spilled his blood? No. But you weren't there to prevent it either.
He swallowed back a lump in his throat.
If you feel guilty, I won't try to dissuade you. In truth, I'd respect you a great deal less if you didn't feel regret.
What do you mean you'd respect me less? When did you start to respect me at all?
I'm not certain, but it must have happened at some point. If it hadn't occurred beforehand, you rescuing Millicent from the Serpentine would have sealed my regard.
That was sheer stubbornness. That cursed doll wasn't going to die for good, not if I could help it.
She smiled a little. I know. And that's why I believe you'll make the girls an excellent guardian, because you've made mistakes and you've learned from them.
I've learned, yes. I've learned that I'm not to be trusted with that kind of responsibility.
Your only true responsibility is to love them. Everything else will fall in line.
She ticked off a sequence of statements on her fingers. No sugar lumps or liquor decanters about, he supposed.
You care for them. They worship you. Financially, you can provide for their every need. They're bound to break things, and you'll get to hammer them back together.
She was down to her little finger.
Without them in your life, you'll be alone.
That last one twisted like a dagger in his chest. She held out her hand, fingers extended.
Look, Chase, it's as plain as the fingers on my hand. All you have to do is reach out to them, and then hold tight.
She didn't understand. Chase didn't doubt his capacity to love. Rosamund and Daisy had captured his heart within hours of entering his life. The problem was he couldn't imagine ever ceasing to despise himself, and that was his downfall again and again. Self-loathing was what drove him to the distraction of a woman's embrace. Not boredom, not lust. Concentrating on a woman's pleasure was the only way he could forget his shame. When a lover wrapped her legs tight about his waist, and when he heard a husky feminine voice begging him for more, for a few blessed minutes he felt something other than worthless. And then afterward, well, was there a word for being less than worthless? Because the moment lovemaking was over, he felt that. No matter how many times he vowed that he'd stop, telling himself he ought to be man enough to shoulder his well-deserved guilt, rather than go burying it in the depths of a lady's bountiful cleavage, inevitably he caved to temptation. The nights were too dark and quiet. Memories took advantage of the emptiness, rushing in to fill the void the way rainwater collected in a ditch, the way blood filled the cracks between cobblestones, the way handfuls of dirt filled a grave. The clubs, the parties, the brandy, they helped, but they helped only so much. Perhaps he'd manage a week of celibacy, sometimes two, but in the end he always gave in. How the devil could he vow to take care of these girls? He couldn't even keep the promises he made to himself. Consider the rumours that swirl about me, he said. How can I raise those girls in any respectable fashion when people believe me a murderer? You heard the Duke. There's no denying that his death worked to my benefit.
Very well, she said. A good part of the temps doubts your character. Perhaps they even have reason to do so. But by withdrawing from polite society, you've made certain they don't have any evidence to the contrary. Seeing you dote on a pair of young girls and watching you encourage and protect them as they grow into remarkable young women, that would probably cause some to reconsider their opinions, don't you think?
Everything she said was so relentlessly logical. Of course it was. She was always sensible. He hadn't realized how badly he'd been craving this. Someone who didn't have any wish to accuse him or forgive him, but to sit down and discuss the facts of the matter in a calm, rational way.
If you give them the chance, people will see that you've changed, Chase. You will see that you've changed.
God. He wanted so desperately to believe her, and he almost could, here, now, staring deep into her lovely eyes and feeling her looking deep into his. He trusted her opinion of his character more than he trusted his own. She made him want to be better. She always had, from the first. But when she left him, he'd be lost all over again. It would never work. Unless he didn't let her go. Keep her close. Make her stay. Make her yours. He dragged her into his arms and kissed her. There was no more contemplation in his mind, no more logic or reason or sense. only a wild impulse that roared to life inside him and pounded in his blood like an ancient drum. One his cave-dwelling ancestors likely pounded in some torch-lit mating ceremony, followed by a buffet of raw antelope. Each beat resonated as a primal urge. Want, need, take, claim, mine. He laid her back against the divan, trailing a path of hot, open-mouthed kisses down her neck, grazing her shoulder with his teeth. He hiked her nightclothes with one hand, pushing them up to her thighs, and reaching beneath to find the heart of her, the place where she was wild and needing and uncivilized too. After parting her with a light, sweeping touch, he pushed two fingers into her heat. She wasn't as ready as he typically made her with caresses of both hands and tongue, but he had no patience for finesse tonight. He probed deep, relishing the tight grip of her sex and the gasps he wrenched from her throat. He reached down to unbutton his trouser falls and free his cock. He slid the thick, hard shaft up and down her sex, grinding and rubbing against her until she was wet for him. Then he backed off to pump his hand over his length, slicking himself with her essence. With his hips, he spread her thighs wide and positioned the head of his cock at her entrance. "Alex, please let me have you. Take me in."
"Chase, wait."
"I want you," he murmured. "I need this to be inside you, make you mine. Mine." Once he'd spoken the word, it echoed in his every heartbeat. "Mine, mine, mine." She put her hands on his shoulders and pushed him away.
"I know you don't want this, not really."
"The hell I don't." He thrust his erection against her thigh, offering her ample proof.
"That's not what I mean. I know how you feel about intercourse, or fucking, if you want to call it that."
"I don't want to call it that. Not now, not with her." He pulled away from her, breathing hard.
"You always do this. Let your body take the lead when you want to hide your heart. Right now, you're hurting. I don't want to take advantage of you."
"You think you could take advantage of me?" He chuckled. "Well, aren't you precious?"
"Well, aren't you patronizing?"
She stood up, pulled down the hem of her shift and dressing gown.
"Good night, Chase."
She left the room. Chase let his head fall backward on the divan and stared up at the ceiling. She was wise to pull away, but wrong about who'd be taking advantage of whom. He would have been using her. Not in the same way he used his other lovers, but using her just the same. Pushing her to accept him, redeem him, cover up all the sins and flaws he didn't want to face deep within himself. God damn his eyes! He needed to leave, get out of this house, remind himself who he was, before he hurt her in some irretrievable way. Fortunately, Chase knew just the place. Chapter 24. A week spent in Hertfordshire was guaranteed to quash even the mildest erotic desires or romantic longings. At least Chase had counted on it working that way for him. Clearly the local residents managed to persevere in marrying and procreating, but they weren't lodged at the Belvoir estate. They didn't spend their days trying to coax details of sheep manure and crop rotation from a sceptical land agent who'd managed the farmland for longer than Chase had been alive. They didn't spend their nights rattling about in a cavernous half-empty mansion, followed by the eyes of disappointed ancestors hanging in their portrait frames. And they didn't spend a tense hour sitting at the bedside of an aged, broken-hearted man who'd lost his powers of speech and movement, but had retained the ability to fix Chase with a watery blue glare that shouted, without words, "This is your fault." The neglected pasture, the empty silence, his uncle's bedridden state and lack of an heir, "This is your fault." So no, he shouldn't have thought of Alexandra or the girls at all. Damn it, his plan had failed miserably. All cursed week long, he'd fought the temptation to go back. It was like Reynaud House anchored one end of a rope, and he'd spent the week tugging at the other end, flexing every last muscle he had in resistance. All he'd earned for his trouble were aches. Each evening he fell asleep wishing Alex was nestled beside him. Each morning he woke wondering what Millicent had died of today. During his ride back to London, it grew worse. A rain cloud split directly above him, rinsing the sheep dung and dust off his back
and leaving him cold, shivering, and desperate to be home. And by home, his heart meant with them. Upon his arrival, Alexandra rushed to him with arms outstretched in welcome. God, he nearly dropped to his knees. The journey had rendered him weary, muddy, shed of all his dutiful intent. If she embraced him, he wasn't sure where he'd find the strength to